Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
My name's Emily. Well, that's what I'll call myself here. And this is my story, straight from the gut. No sugarcoating, because why bother? Life doesn't come with filters. It started innocently enough, like so many bad relationships do. I met Mark at a tech conference in Chicago back in 2015. He was charming, successful, and owned his own security alarm business called Safeguard Solutions. He swept me off my feet with fancy dinners and promises of a secure future. "I'll always protect you, Em," he'd say, his hand on my back, guiding me through crowds like I was some delicate flower. We got married a year later in a small ceremony in the suburbs of Atlanta, where we'd settled down. At first, it was blissful. He bought me clothes, designer stuff I'd never splurge on myself, and he'd lay out outfits for our date nights. "This dress hugs your curves just right." I thought it was sweet, attentive. But looking back, it was the first red flag. Control wrapped in compliments. As the years ticked by, it got worse. "No, not those jeans. They make you look sloppy," he'd snap if I picked something from my old wardrobe. He approved every purchase, every hairstyle. The breaking point came last summer, around June of 2025. We'd been arguing more about money, about my wanting to go back to school for a master's in digital art. "You don't need that," he said one night over dinner, fork stabbing into his steak. "I've got us covered." That evening, I found a receipt in his jacket pocket for Victoria's Secret that wasn't mine. Size 2, red lace. I confronted him, and it all spilled out. An affair with his secretary. Cliche as hell.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
"It's nothing serious," he claimed, but his eyes said otherwise. I kicked him out that night. "Get your stuff and go, Mark. We're done." "Emily, you're overreacting," he pleaded, grabbing his suitcase. "We can work this out. I love you." "Love? This isn't love. Just leave." We moved into a condo downtown, but the separation dragged on. Lawyers, dividing assets. It was messy. I stayed in the house trying to reclaim my space. I started therapy, joined a women's support group online, full of stories from ladies just like me. Midwestern moms, Southern belles, all escaping the same trap. It empowered me. For the first time in years, I bought clothes without his input. A slinky black dress from Target, of all places. And those brown boots I'd always loved, but he'd called too casual. Well, a few months in, around September, I felt ready to dip my toe back into the world. My cousin, Jake. Yeah, that Jake, the one from my mom's side who I'd grown up with in Ohio summers, came to visit. He was divorced, too. A rugged guy in his late 30s working construction in Texas. We'd always been close. Like siblings, almost. But there was this unspoken spark, especially after a few beers. "Remember the red heels I got you?" My stomach dropped. He was watching. I tore through the house that night after hanging up, ripping apart vents and light fixtures. Cameras everywhere. Bedroom, living room, kitchen, even the damn bathroom. tiny hidden ones wired into his system. He'd been spying on me the whole time we were married, and even after. I called my lawyer. This is stalking, right? Invasion of privacy? Absolutely, she said. We'll get an order to remove them. But that night, with Jake waiting downstairs, I didn't let it ruin things. Him, I told Jake over pre-drinks in the kitchen. Let's make this a real date. No holding back. Jake raised an eyebrow, grinning.
You sure, Em? We're family, but hell, if that's what you want.
You look amazing,
he whispered in my ear.
Mark was a fool to let you go. Damn right. Take me home,
I said.
The next morning, my phone buzzed nonstop. Voicemails from Mark's brother.
Emily, call me. It's urgent.
Then the police. Mark had been found dead in his condo, slumped over his computer desk. Heart attack, they said. Massive coronary. Time of death? Around 2 a.m. Right in the thick of my night with Jake. It didn't take long to piece it together. The autopsy showed stress-induced failure. His heart couldn't handle what he'd seen. He'd been logged into the camera feeds, watching the whole damn thing. Pathetic loser, I muttered to myself, staring at the report. The cops questioned me, but it was ruled natural causes. No foul play. Just a man who couldn't let go. Jake stayed a few more days, holding me through the shock.
You okay?
He asked one evening as we sat on the porch with coffee. Yeah. It's messed up, but good riddance. He controlled me for so long. Watching me like that? It's creepy as hell.
He got what he deserved, Jake said, squeezing my hand. Karma's a
I remember the day Petra moved into our neighborhood. I was 23 then, still living at home with my parents while I saved up for my own place after being laid off. Our block was one of those tight-knit neighborhoods where everyone knew everyone's business, but in a good way, or so I thought. Petra arrived in a sleek, black SUV, unloading boxes with the help of a couple of movers. At first, she seemed harmless, maybe even friendly. She waved when she saw us watering the garden, and Mom even baked her a welcome pie. But that changed fast. It started with the fence. Our sidewalk ran along the property line, a wide path where joggers and dog walkers passed without issue. One weekend, Petra hired contractors to extend her chain-link fence right up to the edge, jutting out about 3 feet onto what should have been public space. It forced everyone to step into the street to get around it. Dad noticed it first while mowing the lawn.
Look at that eyesore, he grumbled, wiping sweat from his brow.
That's gotta be against code. Pedestrians can't just dodge cars because she wants more yard. I shrugged it off at first. Maybe it's a mistake. We should talk to her. Dad marched over that evening, his tool belt still on from tinkering in the garage. I watched from the porch as he knocked on her door. Petra answered, arms crossed. Even Petra? Dad said politely. That new fence of yours, it's blocking the sidewalk. Folks have to walk in the road now. You mind pulling it back? She tilted her head, a small smile playing on her lips. It's my property. I checked the surveys. If you have a problem, take it up with the city. Dad's face reddened. Come on, it's common courtesy. We're neighbors. Neighbors respect boundaries. Good night. He came back fuming,
stubborn as a mule. I'm calling the city tomorrow.
And he did. A week later, an inspector showed up, measured everything, and cited her for encroachment. The fence came down, but so did the gloves. That's when Petra's revenge began, slow and calculated, like she was playing a long game of chess while we were still figuring out checkers. First came the spotlights.
One night at around 8 p.m., our bedrooms lit up like a stadium. She had installed three massive floodlights on the side of the house, angled directly at our windows. My room faced hers, and the glare pierced through my curtains, turning sleep into a nightmare. "Mom, what the hell is this?" I yelled from my bed, shielding my eyes. Mom peeked out. "Oh my God, it's like daylight in here!" Dad stormed outside in his pajamas. "Petra, turn those damn lights off!" Her voice floated back from her darkened porch.
"They're for security. Can't be too careful these days."
We called the police, but they said it wasn't illegal. Just petty. Dad bought blackout curtains, but the tension simmered. A month later, the school bell appeared. Petra mounted this old-fashioned brass bell on her back wall, right against our shared fence, and wired it to her landline. Every time her phone rang, and it rang a lot, the bell clanged like a fire alarm. It started at dawn with telemarketers and then went on until late with what sounded like personal calls. The first time it happened, I jolted awake at 6 a.m.
"What's that racket?"
Dad was already up. "That woman's lost her mind." He confronted her again, pounding on her door. "Petra, disconnect that bell! It's harassment!" She opened the door a crack, her eyes gleaming.
"It's my phone system. If it bothers you, maybe invest in earplugs. Or move."
"Move? We've been here 30 years!" Dad shouted.
"Times change," she said softly, closing the door.
Mom tried to mediate, baking another pie and leaving it on her doorstep with a note.
"Let's talk this out."
The pie came back untouched with a note.
"No thanks. Allergies."
I started losing sleep, couldn't eat properly, suffering from the constant interruptions. One night, after a particularly loud ring at midnight, I snapped. I marched over. "Petra!" I banged on her door. "This has to stop! You're ruining our lives!" She answered, phone in hand.
"Ruining? Honey, this is just living. Your dad started it with the city. Actions have consequences."
"You're a b-" she laughed.
"And you're trespassing. Good night, dear."
We decided to sell the house. The market was hot, and Dad figured that it was time to downsize anyway. But Petra owned this detached garage that backed onto our property. Technically, hers from some old deed, but it shared a wall with our sunroom. We had used it for storage with her permission, but that ended. The day that the realtor put up the for sale sign, Petra painted the garage. Neon pink with jagged neon green stripes. It clashed with everything, making our house look ridiculous in photos. Dad exploded. "That's sabotage! She's tanking our sale!" He confronted her in the driveway, me trailing behind. "What the hell, Petra? Paint it back!" She leaned against her car, smirking.
"It's my garage. I like the color. Vibrant, isn't it?"
"You're destroying our property value!" Dad yelled, veins bulging.
"Value is subjective. Maybe buyers will love the pop of color."
I stepped in. "This is insane! Why are you doing this? We never hurt you!" Her eyes narrowed.
"Your father humiliated me with that inspector, with the whole neighborhood watching. Now, feel a taste."
Dad lunged forward, but I held him back. "Dad, no! Let's go!" The fight spilled into the street. Neighbors peeked from windows as Dad shouted obscenities. "You're a vindictive witch! I'll sue you!"
"Sue away. I've got lawyers on speed dial."
It got physical when Dad grabbed a paint can from her porch, empty, but he hurled it at her feet. Paint splattered her shoes.
She screamed, "Oh my God, assault! I'll call the cops!"
The realtor pulled the listing, saying that the neighbor issues were a red flag. We were trapped. Over the next year, Petra's web spread. She started buying up properties on the block. First, the elderly couple next door sold to her after she, quote-unquote, helped with their taxes. Rumor said that she lowballed them. Then the family across the street. One by one, houses flipped to her name. She rented them to quiet tenants who kept to themselves, but the block changed. Gardens overgrown, cars parked haphazardly. It felt like her empire. Turned out that Petra was a real estate shark, divorced twice with a history of flipping neighborhoods. She had done this before in other suburbs, squeezing out families until she controlled the market and then redeveloping for profit.
"Dad, she's playing us," I said over breakfast.
He sighed, looking older. I should have let the fence slide.
We sold eventually, at a loss, to Petra herself. She offered just enough to cover the mortgage, smirking as we signed.
"Welcome to the game," she said.
Moving day, I watched from the U-Haul as she waved from her porch. The block was hers now. 16 out of 20 houses, like she was collecting Monopoly pieces. If you're dealing with a Petra, get out early. Trust me, they are always one step ahead.
Hey fam, Mr. Broccoli this side. Do subscribe and hit the like button if you're enjoying this video.
I was curled up in my dorm room at UCLA, procrastinating on a screenplay assignment when the Facebook message came through. It was late October 2018, junior year, and the glow of my MacBook was the only light.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I was sipping lukewarm coffee, scrolling mindlessly, when a notification pinged from a guy named Ethan Carter. "Hey, this is random," the message started, "but, are you related to Professor James Carter, the poli-sci guy at Stanford? Last name's not super common, and your profile pic, you've got his smile." I rolled my eyes a little. Dad was kind of famous in academic circles. 3 books on American political history, regular guest spots on NPR, the whole package. People messaged me about him sometimes, usually undergrads hoping for an in on his seminar. Ethan's profile showed a clean-cut guy with sandy blonde hair, wearing a Red Sox cap, smiling in front of Fenway Park. Bio said he was at BU, class of 2020. Same age as me, give or take. "Yeah, that's my dad," I replied. "You a fan of his work? His book on the New Deal is basically required reading in my house." A long pause. The typing bubble appeared, disappeared, appeared again. "Not exactly," he wrote. "Look, this is going to sound insane, but I think he might be my dad, too." My stomach dropped like I'd missed a step on stairs. I read it again, then again. "You're joking, right?" "No, I'm not. My mom told me when I was 16. She was his student in the late 90s, took his seminar. They got involved. She got pregnant, dropped out, moved back to Massachusetts. Never told him. I was born March 3rd, 1999. When's your birthday?"
"February 14th, 1999,
I typed, fingers numb. "Valentine's, baby. 17 days before him." I stared at the screen for what felt like forever. And then he sent a photo. A grainy scan of an old snapshot. My dad. Younger, hair longer, no gray, arm around a pretty brunette at what looked like a Cambridge bar. Another attachment, his birth certificate. No father named, but the date matched. And the mother? Rebecca Walsh. I shut my laptop so hard, Jess's water bottle rattled on the desk. My roommate was at rehearsal. The room was dead quiet except for my pulse hammering in my ears. Dad cheating? Mom and Dad had met in high school in Connecticut, married at 23, moved west for his PhD. They still held hands at faculty parties. They'd taken us to Disney World, Cape Cod, Yellowstone. How the hell did this fit? I reopened Messenger. "You have proof besides a photo?" He sent more. Texts from his mom confirming the timeline. A screenshot of an old email chain where she'd asked Dad for space after she found out she was pregnant. Dad's reply was short. "I understand. Take care of yourself." No mention of the baby. We messaged until 3 a.m. He was angry, curious, scared, just like me. "You want to meet?" I finally asked. "Yeah," he said, "if you're up for it. I can fly to LA or you come to Boston, or halfway, whatever. I flew home that weekend. Dad was in the kitchen making Sunday pancakes when I walked in. Dad, who's Ethan Carter? He froze, spatula midair. The batter dripped onto the burner and sizzled. Sophia, how do you... Facebook. He messaged me. Says he's your son, born a couple of weeks after me. Same mom as the TA you slept with while mom was pregnant. His face crumpled. He set the spatula down like it weighed 50 pounds. I mean, sit. He told me everything. Spring of 98, Dad was drowning in dissertation revisions, late nights in the library. Rebecca was in his seminar. Smart, funny, 21. It started as office hours, turned into drinks, turned into weekends at a friend's cabin in the Berkshires. I convinced myself it wasn't real, that it would end when the semester did. And then she told me she was leaving school. I didn't know why.
You didn't ask?
My voice cracked. I was terrified. Your mom and I were fighting nonstop. I thought if I just kept quiet, it would disappear.
Disappear? Like your other kid?
He flinched. I swear I didn't know about Ethan until years later. Rebecca called once in 2005, said she had a son. I offered money, support. She said no, just wanted me to know. Your mom and I went to counseling for 2 years after that.
Mom knows?
Yes. She chose to stay. For us. For you. I left without eating the pancakes. Mom picked up on the second ring. She was at Pilates.
Honey, what's wrong?
I told her. She listened and then said,
I always wondered if there was another one. James swore it was only Rebecca. If you want to meet this boy, I'll help you book the flight.
2 weeks later, Ethan and I met at a coffee shop in Providence, neutral ground. He was taller than his photos, broad-shouldered like Dad. Same hazel eyes, same nervous half-smile. We ordered lattes and sat in a corner booth. So, this is messed up. I laughed, surprising myself. Understatement. He told me about growing up in a small town outside Boston. Single mom who worked double shifts as a nurse. Grandparents who helped raise him. She never badmouthed him. Just said he wasn't ready to be a dad. I spent years hating a ghost. I spent years thinking my family was perfect, I said. Turns out Dad's just really good at compartmentalizing. We talked for 4 hours. Shared playlists, college horror stories, the way we both hated olives, but loved Caprese salad anyway. The coffee shop emptied out around us. The barista started wiping down tables with exaggerated slowness, a polite signal that closing time was near. Outside, the Providence streetlights had come on, turning the drizzle into silver streaks. Ethan checked his phone. Well, it's almost 10. My train's in 40 minutes. I nodded, but neither of us moved. You want to walk a bit? He asked. Clear our heads? We stepped into the night. We wandered without direction, past brick buildings and shuttered storefronts, shoulders brushing every few steps. At some point, we ended up in a park near an empty bench under a dripping oak. We sat. Close. Too close. I keep thinking about what you said, he murmured, about thinking your family was perfect. And I keep thinking about how you grew up hating a ghost, I replied. And how that ghost is the same man who read me bedtime stories. Our eyes met. This is insane, he said, voice rough.
I know.
We shouldn't.
I know.
My dorm's 5 minutes away, he said. No roommate tonight. He's at his girlfriend's. I should have said no. I should have walked away, caught an Uber, flown home.
Instead, I nodded. We half ran through the rain, laughing nervously, hearts pounding like teenagers breaking curfew. His room was small, cluttered, books stacked on the desk, Red Sox poster above the bed. The door shut, and the world shrank to four walls and us. He had the same broad shoulders as Dad, same scattering of freckles across the collarbone. But I pushed the thought away. That was... He started, then stopped. A mistake, I finished quietly. Yeah. We didn't speak for a long time. Eventually, I rolled away, found my clothes in the dim light from the street lamp outside. I should go, I said. He sat up, sheet pooling around his waist. You don't have to leave right now. It's pouring. I need to. My voice cracked. If I stay, I'll want to do it again. And we can't. He nodded, jaw tight. I know. I paused at the door. Ethan, don't. He said softly. Don't say we'll talk tomorrow. We won't. We can't. Tears burned my eyes. Okay. I left without looking back, and never saw or looked him up online again.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
I had moved to Seattle for a job in tech, renting a second-floor unit in an apartment building on a tree-lined street off Pike. The place was full of young professionals in their 20s and 30s. Graphic designers, baristas who moonlighted as musicians, startup folks like me. Then, Sophia came to visit. She flew in from Portland. Our long-distance thing had been going strong for 8 months, and it was her first time seeing my place. We spent the week like we were making up for lost time. Mornings tangled in sheets, afternoons wandering the streets hand in hand, evenings cooking terrible pasta and laughing about it. One night, we went to this Italian spot on Broadway, Jones. We talked about everything. Moving in together someday, maybe transferring up here, kids eventually, if we didn't screw it up first. The next morning, we were heading out for breakfast when we heard the downstairs door slam. We took the narrow staircase down, and there she was, Evelyn, my downstairs neighbor. I'd never met her, never even heard her name until that moment.
Hey, she said, smiling too wide. I'm Evelyn, from Portland, right? Like your girlfriend.
Sophia and I froze on the last step. Portland? How the hell did she know that? Yeah. How was dinner at Jones last night? She cut in, casual, as if we'd been chatting for years.
Looked romantic. The tiramisu's killer there, isn't it?
My stomach dropped. Sophia's hand tightened on mine. We had been alone in the apartment all night after dinner. No one had seen us leave together, except maybe someone on the street. But the specifics. Jones. The tiramisu we'd split. We mumbled something polite, exchanged awkward hellos, and bolted. In the car on the way to get coffee, Sophia kept glancing at me. That was weird, Liam. How does she know? I have no idea. Maybe she overheard us talking on the balcony or something. But the balcony faced the alley, not the street. And we'd kept our voices low. After that, Evelyn started showing up. First, it was small things. A knock at my door asking if I'd seen her missing package. Then, she'd linger in the hallway asking about Sophia.
How long have you two been together? She seems sweet. Does she get jealous easy?
Her questions felt probing, like she was collecting data. One evening, she came up and knocked, and when I opened the door, she leaned against the frame.
Hey, neighbors. I was thinking, why don't the three of us hang out tonight? I brought wine. We could watch something, or not watch something.
She winked at Sophia, who was on the couch behind me. Sophia's face went stone cold. Excuse me?
Come on,
Evelyn pressed, stepping half inside without invitation.
Don't be like that. Life's short. I hear you two having fun up here all the time.
Sounds like you know how to share a good time.
Get the hell out,
Sophia said, standing up. Her voice shook with rage. Evelyn's smile faltered.
Jesus, relax. I was just out now.
Evelyn's eyes narrowed. She turned, but instead of leaving quietly, she slammed her palm against the living room wall, hard, then banged her forehead against it once, twice. She didn't cry out, just stood there a second, breathing heavy, then walked out without another word. The door clicked shut behind her. Sophia and I stared at the dent in the drywall, a small smear of blood where her forehead had hit.
What the hell is wrong with her?
Sophia whispered. I didn't have an answer. The rest of her visit was tense. We kept the windows closed, the music low. Every creak from below made us jump. When Sophia flew back to Portland, I felt relieved and guilty at the same time. The weirdness didn't stop. Late at night, I'd hear Evelyn. Once, I came home and found her sitting on the front steps, hair wild, mascara streaked down her face like black rivers, lipstick smeared across her teeth and chin. She looked up at me with glassy eyes.
You think you're special, with your pretty girlfriend and your nice life?
I walked past without responding, heart hammering. A few months later, the management said that she had been complaining about noises from upstairs for months. I moved out a few weeks later, packed everything in a U-Haul while she watched from her window, curtains half-drawn, face pale. She didn't say goodbye, just stared. This was my weirdest neighbor experience ever.
My girlfriend Debbie and I had been together since college. When we first started dating, I was in the best shape of my life. I was the tight end on the college football team. I ran marathons. I worked out obsessively. But that was 6 years ago. Now I'm nearing 30 and I've really let myself go. My gym membership lapsed and I work a desk job at an IT company. Most guys my age soften up over time, but it's especially tough for ex-jocks like me. I used to be able to eat anything I wanted and then burn off the calories in practice, but now I ate the same amount without any real exercise at all. I was over 300 pounds and had problems with my knees and lower back. Debbie, on the other hand, still looked the same as she did in college. She was as beautiful as ever. I'd always known that Debbie wanted me to get back into shape, but I never put in the effort. This year, she'd finally had enough. She said that she wasn't attracted to me anymore. She said I disgusted her. We tried to talk it out, but in the end, she packed up her stuff and told me she didn't want to see me until I lost all this extra weight. I got a new gym membership and tried to lose weight as quickly as possible. Lifting weights was still pretty easy, but I could barely do any of the cardio. I tried to use the treadmill once, but I gave up after 10 minutes. I was determined to get Debbie back, but it was going to be tough. For the next few weeks, I kept using the gym and I barely ate anything at all. It was a miserable time, but I knew I was making progress. Then I had my 2-week weigh-in and saw that I'd only lost 1 pound. Worse than that, I felt absolutely terrible and I still looked exactly the same. Completely demoralized, I walked to the McDonald's down the street and ordered way too much. It was around 10 at night and I gorged on all the food. I knew that I was sabotaging my diet and rolling back all the progress I'd made, but I couldn't stop myself. In minutes, I'd eaten so much that I felt like throwing up. That was probably the lowest point in my life. With all the food gone, I sat in the empty restaurant for a while, trying to gather up the energy to stand up and walk back home. Before I could, the restaurant's door opened and a beautiful woman walked in. She was tall and dark-haired, and she looked right at me. She saw the huge pile of wrappers in front of me and smiled. Then she walked over and said, "You must have been starved." I instantly told her the entire story. I didn't know anything about this woman, but for some reason, I trusted her enough to unload all my frustrations on her. I told her that my wife left me because I was so out of shape. She listened carefully until I was finished. Then she said, "I can help you get her back, if you want." She said she was a professional dietitian, and she knew all the tricks to help people gain and lose weight. She said that she felt sorry for me and would be willing to help me free of charge. She even promised that Debbie and I would be back together by the end of the year. She wrote down her address on a piece of hamburger wrapper and handed it to me. "Come to this place tomorrow at 9 and we'll get your life back on track." I showed up to the address the next morning. It was a sleek office building without any signage. I walked inside and saw several other obese men sitting in the waiting room. The woman I'd met at McDonald's was at the front desk. She walked over to greet me. She hadn't told me her name before, but now she wore a name tag that said Rebecca. She took me to an examining room in the back where she weighed me, measured my body fat, and calculated my heart rate as I ran on a treadmill. When we were finished, she left the room and came back with a glass jar of pills. She said that I was the ideal candidate for a medicine trial. She was specifically looking for people in my weight range who had a problem with binge eating. The pills would boost my metabolism and cause near instant results. She gave me instructions and a general diet plan and scheduled me to come back in 2 weeks for a check-in. I felt so lucky. This was exactly what I needed. I signed the waiver, gave her a huge thanks, and hurried back home with my new medication. When I got home, I read through all the materials. But the one thing that bothered me was that none of the information mentioned the medicine's name. I assumed it was some new alternative to Ozempic or something, but it felt weird to take a pill without a name. Still, I pushed back all my doubts and I took my first pill before dinner that night. I had a leftover Caesar salad, my last meal before I started Rebecca's diet plan. After I ate dinner, I was cleaning up around the kitchen when I saw that the date on my Caesar salad container was much older than I'd realized. I started having stomach pains right after that and had to throw up in my bathroom. Thank God I did, though, because I noticed something in my vomit. Tiny worms were crawling around. The sight itself made me want to throw up again. It was the most disgusting thing I'd ever seen. Still feeling sick, I grabbed that medicine bottle on the sink and took out one more pill. I cracked it open to look inside, and I saw tiny worms hidden in the capsule. Rebecca was trying to give me worms. Of course they would help me lose weight faster than any other method. She'd given me hundreds of pills to take in the next 3 months. Based on the pile of worms at my feet, that meant Rebecca had given me thousands of worms to ingest. Obviously, that would be fatal. Why would she do that? I spent the rest of the night throwing up, which was definitely a blessing because it meant that I got all the worms out of my system. As I was holed up in my bathroom, I thought of a plan. In the morning, I went back to Rebecca's office with a giant tray of brownies. She seemed surprised to see me so soon. I told her that I was so grateful for her help that I had to come in with a thank you present. To make the lie more believable, I added that I wanted to get all the brownie mix and butter out of my house before I started my new diet plan. She thanked me and set the platter on the counter. It was clear that she wasn't going to eat any of it. A thin, beautiful woman like her wouldn't eat things like brownies. So I kept thanking her over and over, eventually pressuring her into cutting off a small piece for herself. She ate the whole thing in front of me and then forced a smile. That's when I told her that I'd added her pills to the brownie. She gasped and immediately forced herself to cough up what she'd just eaten. Then she spun back toward me, looking furious. "Why did you do that to me?" She was acting like the victim here, but I wasn't going to put up with that. I demanded to know why she wanted to poison me with worms. She wouldn't answer. So I pushed back her reception table until she was pinned against the wall. Then I waited until she started talking. She explained that she and I had a one-night stand back in college, and I'd completely ghosted her. Honestly, I had no recollection of her at all, but I guess she resented me so much that she decided to make me a victim in her elaborate scheme.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
She'd already done it to 3 of her exes, all of whom had died. Furious, I called the police and gave them the address. Then I shoved one more handful of the brownie into her mouth and left her there. The police would sort out the rest. I'm still single, and I still need to lose a lot of weight. But I'm just glad that I didn't fall for Rebecca's plan. I'd probably be dead by now.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.